When I started working, there was no internet. There were no cell phones, you know. And when I was in sales, we were the trusted advisor because there was no way to get information really out in the world. We were the provider of information. So transitioning from that to where now the buyer is in control, especially if they know what they're looking for. It's a tougher world out there, so I get it. So I'm very interested in speaking with people like you, especially from the standpoint of you're the recipient of the work that I specialize in, which is the top of funnel, getting you a qualified op, you know, and how you take it from there. So that's why I'm really excited about you joining this call today. I think there's a lot of misinformation coming around about you guys and what you get.
Yeah. Do you feel that it's much more of a challenge with having more aware buyers?
I think there is an implied, I think there's two problems. One is people are assuming that buyers know what to look for. So in that sense, no, it's the same way it was when I was selling, because buyers really don't know in a lot of cases the why behind something is good for them to do, to why change. And I think that's still the same. I think what happens, though, is you probably spend more time unteaching them of misnomers, of bad information, of kind of a implied sense of knowing about something because of what they research. So there's probably a lot more need to negotiate now than there was perhaps when I was in sales. That makes sense.
It completely does, because I could see how that, you know, we have that kind of sale and negotiation always comes in, because when they're doing apples to apples comparison, that's that's the whole problem. Is if they do the research, they do an apples to apples comparison, and half the time they're not comparing apples to apples. It's two different completely things, or completely structures, or motivation for what they're trying to do, and thinking that they can shoehorn something in. And you have to work all around that just to get them in the right mindset to even begin the negotiation.
That's right. See, so that piece, we really didn't have to finesse when I was in sales, because it was more about building rapport and trust. And the buyer had to put a lot more trust in us, that we knew what was best for them. Whereas now, there is a level of trust still, yes, but there's also the having to back up. Let's back up to this, you know. And so there's a lot more of undoing, a lot more psychology that you have to deploy as a sales professional, I think, in understanding the behavior a lot more earlier up in the cycle, earlier up in the pipeline. And the other thing is there's also a unfortunate incident of this whole thing is there isn't a teaching out there that buyers are higher awareness, not only the apples to orange, but that they know a lot more about things. And I think we give them too much credit, because sometimes they just don't know what they don't know.
I agree with that too. And you, within the specific industries, especially if you're a salesperson that's selling two different industries, there are some that are so much farther along than others. And it's a totally different sale from one vertical to another.
So, you know, I think it's good to hear from the professionals that have the baton passed to them. And that's why I asked you to share with us your experiences as being the recipient of that baton, because I talk about everything you need to do to prepare to pass the baton. But now that the baton is passed, you know, what experiences have you encountered in trying to get that thing to close one? So
I think there's a big challenge, like with, you know, with that baton passing. I think it resonates. When we talked before, I was thinking about this, and there's whole line being drawn of when does it get passed, you know, what qualifies it as being that, you know, passed from that top of the funnel into a sales person's hands. Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to be different for every industry. But I think the challenge is understanding the level of the SDRs or the BDRs and the people that are actually passing those leads over, mm-hmm. understanding and trusting them to be able to deliver valuable content or qualify really well.
Right.
And I've seen it both ways, you know, even within our own organization, where it's really easy to pass up a ton with certain team members because you can trust their qualification skills, the level of knowledge that they have that's truly qualified, and you can pass it later on in the cycle. Mm-hmm. Whereas some you want to immediately grab it.
Yeah, like yeah. when I was in the BDR role. And we called them business developers in my world. This is pre-predictable revenue. I fed 3 account executives like yourself, and we did a BANT process, budget, authority, need, timing. But there were 2 AEs who wanted me to quantify the budget to the point where they wouldn't touch it if there wasn't substantial reason for them to go after a lead that might be able to get budget. And then I had another AE that said, don't even bother with budget, Mary Lou, because I will be able to help them find money. So she was more confident in her ability to create a sense of urgency around putting this product or service in, and that she was confident that the organization would find the money because they would see the value. So to what you just said, it really depends on the SDR's capability. And it also depends on who the SDR is passing the baton to and what they're willing to take. But then overlaying that are the sales manager's desires of what he wants to see in order to be able to forecast that opportunity as a high percentage, low percentage, medium percentage, however they do that. So a lot of times what I see is we work through a BANT or a ANUM, authority, need, urgency, and money, whatever. And we decide based on the product we're selling, and there may be 3 or 4 products too that we're selling as a BDR, SDR. So what we do is we create a matrix of, okay, here's the 4 categories of authority, there's need and sense of urgency, there's timing or time frame, or, you know, somewhere in the initiative, is the initiative going to be sometime this year or next or whatever? And then, you know, there's this budget money, can they find it column. And then what we do is we create a matrix saying, for this product, here's what we're going to attempt to get as an SDR. And for the next product, it may be beefier. And why we need to know that is because we want to be able to understand the talk time of how much conversation we need to have at top of funnel in order to get from initial conversation to a qualified opportunity. Why we want to know that is because that determines our pipeline velocity. And then once we give it to the account executive like you, Pleasant, then what your job is to do is within a certain period of time, 24, 48 hours, 72 hours, decide if that lead is of quality to take it the rest of the way, meaning that you're putting your stamp of approval on it and you're going to accept it. So we have an actual metric that we track in as part of our metrics to look at sales qualified leads and then sales accepted leads from the AE. And we strive for a 90% or higher ratio of, for every 10 leads I send Pleasant, she'll accept 9 at least. That's the goal. And then what happens is once you accept, then we analyze it and say, okay, the AEs are accepting these types of leads. Here's how far we got into the qualification process. So then we start training the SDRs saying, look, everybody has to get at least this minimum.
So with your SDRs, and so you were calling them BDRs before,
mm-hmm.
correct? And I think that's a difference, and that's, there has become this division with BDRs and SDRs.
Oh.
And how people are seeing that. I see a lot more of, like, with, for example, our SDRs,
mm-hmm.
they're not doing a lot of deep discovery, qualification. Their whole goal is to get a meeting set for their AE.
Okay.
And then the AE's baton to pass it on, to take it, to do the discovery, simply because for us, we look at the SDRs, their KPIs are around getting meetings set, getting those conversations started with the AEs, because the AEs know to do a deep dive discovery and are able to discover those pieces of information.
Mm-hmm.
So we have certain qualification things, you know, specific, you know, pieces that they have to have. So, you know, tool sets that they have to have. They have to be a user of Salesforce, you know, simple things like that, that we know that if we don't have those in place, they're not going to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
But our SDRs don't really do a huge, deep level of discovery with the prospects. And their whole first call, their first goal is, let me set up an introductory meeting, and they bring on the AEs for that initial meeting.
Okay.
But we also have a BDR, though, with our more enterprise team.
Mm-hmm.
And the BDR there will actually do more discovery qualification for the prospects, and they're working the leads further into the funnel and closer to the pipeline before they're passing it off.
Interesting. Well, you know, a lot of people don't remember this, but the Predictable Revenue book released in 2011 talked about a 3-hour 15 process. And by definition, in today's world, that 3-hour 15 process is describing the BDR role, not the SDR role, which is kind of interesting. So really what it boiled down to was a 15-minute AWAF call, which is the Are We a Fit, which for you, you were talking about, you know, they have to have Salesforce. It's your top level qualifiers that if they don't have these three things, then it's not worth the time to even go through a qualification process, because the AE is not going to be able to convert that very easily. And then once we do the 15-minute call of the 3:15, the hour was to actually do maybe a little bit of a demo or a discovery call with one of the decision makers, followed by a 2-hour call with the team. So the decision maker and his direct and indirect influencers. So by definition, you're doing a lot more discovery. And that role is the role that was described in Predictable Revenue as an SDR role. Since then, we've discovered and learned that companies like Outreach, like your company, are actually creating tiers of accounts that have certain levels of priority. And the people who are doing the business development in those different tiers are called different things. So you have SDRs that maybe just do the 15-minute AWAF call and set the meeting. And then the AE is responsible to take it the rest of the way. And then you have BDRs, business development reps, or ADRs, account development reps, that actually go through the discovery process and actually meet with the team. And the AE comes in on that last call to take the baton.
Yeah, I actually think, you know, just from my background with thinking about education and teaching, and even from going from being a field rep to more of an inside AE, it seems like that's a process that's been working really well, because mm-hmm. you can have very strategic processes in place that are perfected on and made, you know, really made them really well. Like our SDRs, I was with our SDRs yesterday and the day before, and they are so good on the phone. When they get people on the phone, they have perfected their methodology of their research, of their initial introductions, of getting people to elicit those responses of, yeah, let's get on a call. And they are so good at it. And I even know as myself, if I were to do that, I would be very inefficient
mm-hmm.
because I'd be going through my notes and I'd be repracticing my things. And, mm-hmm. you know, and it makes it to where when you can chunk it down into those specialized roles and
right.
compensate well for them, mm-hmm. You know, whether it's very top of the funnel or closing the deals, it makes it to be a much more fluid motion when moving people through the sales cycle.
Yeah, but you know, like anything, the more that you push on the AE in this SDR AE combo, where they're getting the meetings and the AE is taking it the rest of the way, if you have a very complex sale, that's going to bog down the AE at some point. They won't be able to take that many opportunities per month. That's why I was able to feed three as a BDR, because our average deal size was $150,000 and up, and it was a recurring revenue. It wasn't a SaaS offering. It was a service offering. But because I needed to only generate eight opportunities a month for three AEs, because that's all they could work, the sales cycles were longer. So when you're starting to think about what Pleasant and I are talking about with this SDR role splitting, or the business development role splitting, is thinking through the talk time or conversation time. Sales conversation time is a good parameter to call it, of how long they're going to be working with a prospect before the handoff takes place. Because by definition and the math, if the SDR is only doing, I shouldn't say only, if the SDR is set to create meetings, then their talk times are shorter, which means they should be able to generate more of those meetings per month. If they're going through the qualification process and only handing off to the AE after there is this 2-hour discovery / common vision meeting, whatever you want to call it, they're not going to be able to generate as many of those per month. So that's another consideration when you're working on, you know, how many opportunities can we actually generate? The talk time or sales conversation time is a big factor in that.
Yeah. Absolutely. We did experience some of the exactly what you're talking about. And several months ago, we transitioned and we tested that methodology of how do we want our AEs to work and our SDRs to work. So mm-hmm. we actually tried it. We've always consistently done, you know, SDRs are setting the qualification meetings, pass it to the AEs. We transitioned it to more of the SDRs are going to do more of the research on the accounts. They're going to be doing the qualification calls, and they're going to be pushing the meetings up to the AEs when they're actually qualified and they've talked more and done that initial discovery. Mm-hmm. And what we found for our business was that we were not generating enough meetings. And yeah. So we saw a huge dip because right. For us, we need more meetings on the calendar with our AEs working them because our deal cycles are a little bit more accelerated. And that was what we needed from the SDR based on the productivity level.
Yeah. So for those of you listening to this, you know, testing is a big component of this because you may go in thinking this is the perfect structure. This is the perfect handoff methodology that would work with our product or service. But when you and planning is always very important. But when you start executing, like Pleasant was saying, they had metrics that they knew if they didn't meet certain numbers that they were going to be suffering as the opportunity moved further into the active pipeline. So they essentially course corrected. Would that be fair to say? They course corrected and went to a more hybrid model, and where the SDR is not necessarily diving into the active pipeline as deeply.
Absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. We did.
Yeah.
Very quickly. When we started seeing projected numbers, very quickly we pivoted.
Okay. So tell us, what have been the experience? A lot of people are, you know, they're embracing separation of roles. Some people are, oh, wow, that's tough to be able to pull a new role into my company that just does business development. Not everybody's ready for that. Have your experiences been? Have you done all roles in a prior life? And what is the difference between you doing everything like a solo entrepreneur who has to prospect, close, and service versus the separated model where you're focusing mostly on closing? Tell us about what your experience has been.
Yeah, I have done all of the roles. So when my very first sales role was doing everything from prospecting to closing, even implementing the product solutions for the different clients. So I was in a little bit of everything, and it's each position has been a little bit different. I think we're seeing a trend where this is something, even with our larger companies that have been more established traditionally, you know, maybe they're farmers and they're more order takers, or they've had their sales teams that are doing a little bit of everything because they've got more strategic territories. We've seen a big shift in this division of roles. because I think people are really starting to take notice of the data when it comes to getting sales acceleration tools and how you know everyone's getting those types of things, having mm-hmm. more meetings and you know getting more into the pipeline and it is so competitive. I think that we're seeing a lot more companies start to break away and get specific people to do the meeting setting, the prospecting, and try to supplement the pipeline mm-hmm. while they're letting the sales team members focus more on closing. I personally found it to be a challenge doing everything within the role. And, mm-hmm. you know, salespeople are we love to close. And we love to put out fires, and we love to hop on the things that are in front of us. And there's a very low percentage of salespeople that are very, very targeted in what they do within, you know, their prospecting part of the day. There's a very low percentage of people that are actually very strategic with how they plan their days out to make sure that their pipelines are constantly filled. And mm-hmm. that's where you see that up and down wave. Right. So we see that all the time. And I think that's the challenge, is being able to juggle. Multitasking is commonplace in every company, but it's not ever the most effective thing to do. So like I said, I found it a personal challenge. I would be on the road a lot, especially with field reps. We see a lot of companies that still have field reps that are very responsible for filling their pipeline, and it becomes a great challenge because they're going to client meetings, especially when you're in geographic territories. They're typically more in front of people if it's an outside role, more in front of people on the road, mm-hmm. you know, doing meetings and more complex deals. So it becomes a challenge when it comes to pipeline filling, and that's where you see most people lagging behind. Is their pipeline going to sufficiently meet the expectations of their quota?
Right. Yeah. I think a lot of it is the juggling, the fact that people are horrible at multitasking, and as humans, we're just really not good at it. Very few people can do it well. And the other thing is, from a psychology point of view and habit point of view, we're kind of wired to do certain roles anyway. Like, I am definitely a business developer at heart because, you know, I liken it to duty dating. I love to date. Even though I'm, just so everybody knows, I've been married forever. I'm 59. I've been married. I've married my college sweetheart. Okay. So I have a longevity there. But from the standpoint of working with, from the standpoint of working with prospects and things, I definitely like to have conversations and start conversations and then love them and leave them to the AE and go on to the next one. Whereas, you know, Pleasant is probably the kind of person who loves the engagement, loves the, you know, getting engaged and going the rest of the way with getting married, having kids, you know, the whole thing. But I think a lot of it is we have to really look at who we are as people. And for asking a salesperson to do all roles is extremely difficult. And to do them all well and to do them all consistently so that you can scale your business, if that's what you want to do. The first opportunity you have to separate the sales roles is when you should go for it. I agree with you, Pleasant.
I'll give you a couple examples too. Is one of the big terms. I'll give you this and then a little story. But one of the big terms that we hear a lot is repeatability. How do you repeat it and scale it? Mm-hmm. And when you have sales teams that are doing from start to close, the end to end prospecting and closing, it is almost near impossible to repeat a process. Almost all of them are individual mm-hmm. because their days are so broken up by all different kinds of things that, that they're putting out, that they're doing meetings, they're doing this, to actually put that into a process and even train. Like, here's, you know, bring on new people. Here's how you're going to do this. Everything from start to finish. Mm-hmm. It's an exhaustive list.
Yeah.
I was thinking about, you know, I always bring myself back to teaching because that's my root. And so I taught for 4 years, I taught middle school and I taught history. And I was the second highest scoring in the division in the district with our scores. You know, everybody's score-based, and I love data, and I'm pretty competitive, so I was very excited about it. And I was second only to the teacher that taught all gifted, you know, courses within the district. So pretty excited. So I was very good at my craft. Very, very good, you know, high-scoring kids because I taught them really well and always had wonderful years. So I took a year off and I went back into teaching after the year off. And the position that I took was a fifth grade teaching position. And it was every single subject.
Wow.
So my day changed and my outlook on teaching actually completely shifted just by making that change into elementary education. Because I now had to plan, instead of for one subject with modifications for three different classes, I was planning for seven subjects, if you include all like the spelling and all that, seven different lesson plans and subjects for all of my different learners that were within one classroom. Mm-hmm. And I was really good at planning history, but I was really terrible at the new math standards. Really, really terrible. And I almost did a I say this very honestly, I felt like I did a disservice to the kids that year because I just was not a skilled math teacher. Mm-hmm. Nor was I a skilled, basic reading teacher either. And those were my biggest areas of weakness, and I struggled all year long with those. And I was constantly having to work after hours to figure out how to get these lesson plans structured to be effective. And, you know, it was a really rough year for me.
Right.
And that makes me, I always think about it within sales, too, because, you know, people love certain aspects. I do love the clothes. I love taking those deals and going through with them, and I'm very good at them. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to the other parts of it, you know, it's your heart's not necessarily in it. So I think when you have those specialized roles, you can find people that fit really well, that excel in those positions and nurture them, help them, and let them be coaches to others that are coming on, and you're going to see a much higher success.
And like you said, the top of funnel is more of a numbers portion of the framework of the pipeline, because we're dealing with hundreds and thousands of contact records and we're squeezing those into accounts and people who want to continue conversation with us. So, you know, we have a lot of numbers to help us get to where we want to go. And we also have the ability to leverage technology to get us there faster with more quality. So I think a lot of times, if you're the type of person like I am, who is more numbers driven and process driven, you enjoy this constant habit of getting up every day, looking at your numbers, knowing that you're going to have a 2-hour block time of phone calls, and looking forward to that, looking forward to all those conversations, because you're dwindling, you're trying to get people out of your active pipeline as fast as possible. And I find that very challenging, whereas some people would prefer to take an opportunity where you're building rapport, you're building that relationship in a deep way and guiding them towards a purchase decision that's going to help their career. That's a very different way of looking at things. So I think the biggest news coming out of all these books that I've been fortunate to be a part of is that we need to respect the fact that salespeople should have separate roles, and that let the person really excel at that role and dive into it deeply with continual education. I mean, I think that's one of the things where I know people, when they hear the term sales trainers, a lot of these companies just their eyes glaze over, you know, but we definitely see an improvement the longer that people practice. And I remember speaking with Mark, who's your counterpart over in as a sales director over there. And what they do is when they're getting ready for this block time, which is this 2-hour or so, or hour and a half, whatever it is, of call time, they kind of warm up the voice by role-playing. So they're training how many times a week now? Is it every time they do block time that they're training people?
It's a constant
training. And I think the beauty of what you guys are doing over there is that you not only train on the voice side, but you're training on the writing side. So they write emails together as a team. They critique them. So everybody's just getting better and better and better. And it also means that the pipeline velocity is getting faster and faster, and the lag is shrinking. And that's really what we want, because we take those metrics along the active pipeline and work really hard to get a formula for predictable revenue, which is the goal, you know, especially if you want to scale your business. It's definitely where we're working towards, and separating the roles is a big way to get there. So what else, Pleasant, do you think that our audience would want to know, or that you can share with them as things that you've learned, that, you know, that mistakes you've made, or things that you've discovered along the way that would be helpful for people who are considering this separation?
I think that one of the challenges that we have, you know, with the separation of roles is the misconception and the devaluing of specific roles within a sales organization. You know, there are typically SDRs aren't the glorified position, mm-hmm. you know, and when people get calls from SDRs, it's you know, oh, this is just the lower person on the totem pole, or, you know, there are those misconceptions, and we see those all the time, that they're not as highly valued. And I think it's really, you know, we've really strived and, you know, we've seen some companies that do this really, really well, where you literally have career SDRs or ADMs or BDRs, whatever you want to call them, simply mm-hmm. because they are really positioned as a high commodity within the organization, because they are the first line of contact for those new accounts and new divisions that you're trying to get into. They're going to be that first point of contact, mm-hmm. and your very first face of the company. And so it's really important when you are separating the roles that this is a highly valued position. That it's, you know, I know compensation is a big, you know, it's always a faux pas to talk about, but mm-hmm. it's, you know, that's an important piece to it, is making sure that those meetings are valuable. Yeah. That to the SDRs or to the BDRs, whoever you're passing it to make sure they know this is a valuable thing that we take seriously, and we want you to get us and pass us good things that our sales team can work, because we'll treat you well for that.
Yeah.
So I think that's a very important thing to keep in mind with the separation.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember going back to my BDR days, I changed my title to Chief Conversation Starter. Because essentially, that's what I was, the chief of starting conversations.
I love that title.
And it's funny, because I've seen some people since we wrote Predictable Revenue, I think I mentioned it in the book, and I see some people when I get emails that use that term, or chief door opener, or, you know, it's good. It really is a difficult role. And it's one that should be embraced as part of the team. Just like when you're running a relay, every leg of the relay is important. It's not just coming home, you know, it's starting. So I think if we look at a relay team and think of ourselves as members of that team, each one has a very important role in making sure that the prospect is taken care of from beginning all the way to end, and then beyond when they become a client. Definitely.
I think another important thing, just with what you just said, with the prospects being taken care of from beginning to end, I think it's a very important exercise to take a look at how the prospect is taken care of when they're being passed on. Mm-hmm. One of the risks that you have with the separations of roles is the number of contacts and points of contacts that person has to go throughout their sales cycle. Mm-hmm. And it can get a little frustrating and overwhelming if it's a really poor handoff between the different departments or the different, you know, people within the sales team, especially if you have, like for us, we have, you know, solutions consultants, and we have customer success managers that come on, and, you know, sometimes we're introducing security, and then we've got our SDRs, and then, you know, so there's multiple players, especially the more complex your sale becomes, the more people that are going to be brought into the conversation.
Yep.
And so just keeping that in mind of really being able to smoothly transition and do it in a very in a way that makes the client feel like it's they are being of value. Like for us, you know, I tell our team when they pass it over, I want the SDR on the first call with the AE. And I want them to introduce, and the way they always introduce is, you know, I really respect your time, so I wanted to make sure that I brought on a person that has worked with companies just like you, so that way we can have a really, you know, we can make the most of our time. So this is so-and-so who I'm bringing on for you, and let's have a, start the conversation that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think it's really important to think about that handoff, because you could have a really poor handoff and leave the prospect very confused.
Yes. Most definitely. And I think the other thing is, like you said, you have to make it clear early on that you're going to be taking them to a certain point. And I used to actually kid people that, you know, you and I are going to go down a path together and down the road together. And then once we both think we're ready, I'm going to have you meet the rest of my family. And essentially it's, you know, the resources that we're going to bring in order to be able to understand the business requirements. Now, granted, we had a very complex sale. We did a lot of work in solution with solution consultants and things, because we had to put together a plan, yada, yada, yada. It went on and on. So we would bring in resources as the opportunity rose in priority on the forecast. So we wanted to make sure that we weren't wasting our internal resources as well. But the clients, the prospects knew the different levels of when people are coming in and why they're coming in and how that's going to benefit them. And also it helped them to prepare, because they needed to bring their people in, et cetera, et cetera. So we made sure that each of those handoff points were well communicated. We gave them enough time to digest them. But we also gave them that back door that they could, you know, get a hold of us in a pinch if there was something, if they had difficulty in getting information or whatever. We always left a back door key for them if they needed to do that. Very rarely did they exercise utilizing that, but they knew that we cared about them, even though we're now handing them off to the other family members. So it was a good process. I really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed it a lot. So Pleasant, we're at the end of our call. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate you sharing your expertise with our audience. And I think, you know, what I really want the audience to understand is that separation of roles is a very flexible concept, and it really depends on what you're selling, how long it takes you to sell what you're selling, and who's involved in what you're selling in order to figure out the path that's going to work best for you. And as Pleasant said before, you may go down a path and then change it only to realize that the change wasn't effective. So embracing change, embracing testing, and pivoting if you need to are all very common things that happen when you separate roles. And then the last thing she said too is that the handoff is very important to keep the communication flowing to your prospects, so they're not confused, they're not, you know, basically lost in where they are, where they should be, where they're going. The communication has to be very, very intelligent and timely, so that they know exactly what's going to happen to them as they go through this process with you. Thanks again for your time. Really appreciate you talking with me today.
Thank you, Mary Lou. It was a pleasure.